grabbed the restaurant. I must have got the license number.
It's your car, pal?
Huh?
I've been admiring your bike.
Oh, you interested in the motorcycles?
No, I just like big things between my legs.
Thank you, officer.
Welcome to Exposition Street, celebrating geek movies in all their splendiferous glory and a presentation of Prismatic Tsunami. My name is Eric. Thank you very much for joining us for episode 51 of our film cast, where every week we take a movie that we, some of us really want to watch, and others may or may not know that they really want to watch it yet. I'm going to stay with that. Does that work?
Sure.
and tear it apart for fun and profit. Well, no profit, but
profit. You know, I was about to say, who's getting paid?
Who's getting profit?
Did I say that out loud? I didn't mean profit. I meant you guys are okay with your current salary, right? We're going to go ahead and introduce the panel today before we get into this particularly delicious piece of cinema. Over here, he's a rebel. He's just channeled his rebellion into strip data mining. It's Richard.
I make everything groovy.
You do make everything groovy, and I appreciate you so much for it. Dip, you got your psycho killer romp in my freewheeling romantic comedy. It's Vanessa.
Disclaimer, don't like romance movies.
But you do like psycho killer romps. So,
I do like psycho killer romps.
Every time he gets involved with a married man, his ex shows up and starts shooting up the place. It's Jason.
I can't argue with that.
My job is to freeze your brain on the way to the show. Mission accomplished. And finally, he can't count the number of times some random woman drug him to a motel, put boobies in his face, and immediately called his boss. It's the kid.
That was so cool. She was so mean. I loved it.
But we're going to talk about the movie now.
Oh, damn. Well, it did give me some interesting flashbacks.
So we decided in the month of January, give or take, we were going to go ahead and do a dealer's choice sort of approach to our movie selection. So it didn't have to be genre stuff. We usually try to pick things that we collectively as a group would be the kind of movies we would watch, or at least in the general category, if you will.
Oh, it wasn't a motel.
Good call. We're going to talk about the movie. The whole premise here was we can go ahead and select things that are outside of that wheelhouse a little bit and torment our fellow cast members. So we,
this is definitely not geek fair.
This is not your typical selection for us. And, I want to thank Richard now.
Before we get any further,
for bringing us something wild, because that's what we're going to talk about today.
Yeah.
So if you have
something wild is the name of the movie, not just what he brought us.
That's also true. It's my second choice, unfortunately. Working Girl was not
available on stream. Yeah.
If you haven't ever seen this before or even heard of it, apparently that's not real surprising. The movie was kind of a sleeper.
For more than one reason.
Sleeper.
Well, now, okay, and we need to get into that a little bit because it's not as obvious as you think. There's a lot going on there. Something Wild was released on November 7th, 1986. At the time, it jumped all the way to number 7 at the box office with $1.8 million. To put it in context, Crocodile Dundee still had the top spot after 7 weeks at this time.
But to be fair, it's Crocodile Dundee.
It was an independent film, though, at a time when independent films weren't a thing.
That's fair.
That's legit.
That explains so much.
Thank you.
The Color of Money was the number 2. No, Soul Man was in the theater still. Peggy Sue Got Married was in the theaters. Jumpin' Jack Flash was in its 5th week and beat this one.
I've never even heard of Jumpin' Jack Flash.
Whoopi Goldberg movie.
Oh, yeah. No, okay. We need to watch that.
Do we?
I do love Whoopi
Probably
Goldberg.
Not for the podcast, but definitely need to watch that.
Okay.
A free-spirited woman, quote, kidnaps a yuppie for a weekend of adventure, but the fun quickly takes a dangerous turn when her ex-convict husband shows up. Fun fact, when you're looking at the cast of this movie before you sit down and watch it, and you see, oh, it stars Jeff Daniels, Melanie Griffith, Ray Liotta. We're going to talk about these people a little bit.
Right.
Oh, yeah. And you get maybe 90, no, 80, no, I guess probably closer to like
63.
you get more than halfway through the movie before Ray Liotta shows up. And the whole time I'm wondering, did I miss something? Was he just, I mean, did he really look different when he was young?
On the plus side, of those three cast members in that description, you know exactly who's who.
That's true.
That's very true.
That's very true. And oh boy, howdy. See, directed by Jonathan Demme, or Demme, I'm not sure how it's pronounced, D-E-M-M-E.
Demme.
He did Silence of the Lambs, he brought us Married to the Mob, he brought us Philadelphia, and I picked those three movies off his list because that you can't pick three more different movies.
Right,
I like
right.
Silence of the Lambs.
Not easily. That's pretty impressive.
That's such an interesting body of work.
It is, isn't it?
It is.
And there's a lot of things carried from this movie that went to those movies.
And Married to the Mob actually feels like it's probably the shortest jump in a way.
Yeah, Married to the Mob is...
Yeah.
And of course, this was before any of those. But he did a bunch of music video stuff. You know, he did a lot of directing in the 80s and in the 90s. Philadelphia, of course, was a critical darling. You know, I actually never sat through it because there was something about watching Tom Hanks die of AIDS that didn't appeal to me at the time. I understand it was a beautiful movie.
Yeah, you lost me at Tom Hanks, so that's why I never sat through
it. True. We're working on you, though. You know, Cloud Atlas was a good step. It's a very positive step.
I keep forgetting he was in it.
How?
He was in most of it.
He was in several roles. Don't deny the power of the brain. Entire movie.
Fair enough. The script was written by someone named E. Max Fry, and I read something that said they were a film school student when they brought the script to Jonathan, and he ended up picking it up immediately. And music by Laurie Anderson and John Cale. Not a lot to talk about there.
I was going to say that's kind of a misnomer because the entire movie was pretty much set up to be a source music movie, so only the tiniest amount need to be done with Laurie
with any
and
scoring.
John.
What they did, though, some very electronic stuff and some very deep, moody stuff that was great.
But get this. When they brought them on, Laurie Anderson was supposed to do this happy, feel-good, lovey-dovey part, and John was supposed to do this deep, intense,
so they were only each given half the movie.
And they couldn't get their parts together, but they ended up writing something amazing for the other part. So they ended up switching which did which from what they were originally hired for.
That's really funny.
And oh my gosh, I love Laurie Anderson. I loved her at the time. I love her now.
Well, and both of these both of these composers have had a history in music
going
back a ways and have done a lot of different stuff and been known for things other than composing.
But they were brought in for the few things that they couldn't just use source music.
Which this movie had a lot of freaking music.
So much because they were trying to do all source music. That was their goal.
It was rated R, ran an hour and 54 minutes, starring Mr. Jeff Daniels as Charles Driggs. Here's an interesting thing. I didn't know this because I didn't see this at the time, and that's actually kind of a thing because a lot of people didn't see this at the time. I would have had no idea who Jeff Daniels is at this point. Looking at his his bibliography, looking at his list of credits, he didn't do anything before this that I would have ever known.
It's one of the only movies I really like him in.
To be fair, I wouldn't have known him this either, but I also wasn't alive.
Yeah, that's true. Arachnophobia and Welcome Home, Roxy Carmichael were like 4 years after this. The Butcher's Wife was a year after that. And I love Jeff Daniels' work. I like him in a lot of the stuff that he does. He's an amazing dramatic actor. He's such a great delivery.
He's good at dramatic acting, yes.
And then he did
Dumb
and Dumber.
Well, he's probably good at the stuff that isn't, too, but I don't pay any attention to it. So I saw, full disclosure, I did see Dumb and Dumber at some point. I don't think I could consider myself open to the annals of cinema if I wasn't willing to take a hit at some point. But it's kind of like...
I've seen Dumb and Dumber. I didn't like Dumb and Dumber.
It broke both of those actors for me.
That's what broke Jim Carrey. Never mind. So
really sad, isn't it?
To be fair, a lot of Jim Carrey's characters don't have a lot in common with each other. So trying to compare all of his characters
to
one
true.
Character.
That's true. He's extraordinarily chameleon.
He was in terms of endearment.
Oh, he was. Mm-hmm. I didn't even notice that. Oh, that was around this time.
1983.
83, that was before this. Oh, wow. I have not seen Terms of Endearment in a while, and I don't regret that at all.
I don't know that I've ever seen it.
And you shouldn't regret that at all.
You're fine.
That's okay. You probably haven't seen Arachnophobia.
I have seen Arachnophobia.
Weird.
I know.
That is weird. I wouldn't have expected that out of you.
It was a school thing. We watched it in art class.
Oh, God, why?
To learn the meaning of terror?
here. Express
it
something.
It was to teach us about...
How to gibber in the corner.
No, the word when something splits down the middle and it's the same on both sides.
Hemisphere symmetry? Symmetry?
Palindrome? Symmetry. I don't know. Symmetry.
Palindromes.
Spiders are very symmetrical, and we did a thing.
He said word.
Where we did art.
Oh, okay.
About symmetry and.
That's fair. I was just trying to figure out what arachnophobia had to do with art class.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was.
That's not bad.
It was to teach us symmetry, and I did not enjoy that two classes.
Lesson we needed. It's the lesson we deserved.
You could have watched The Music Man and seen all the symmetry you needed from people.
Uh huh.
There's lots of symmetry.
Just going to leave that line there. Anyway, I was trying to decide what I'd seen Jeff Daniels in most recently, because he hasn't done a lot recently.
Right.
And it turns out I binged The Newsroom a couple of years ago is what it was. I knew I'd seen him in something, and I loved that show. But I know a lot of people that were very critical of that show. But I liked his performance in it. But he also was in Allegiant. I think it was the last movie I saw him in, one of the Divergent series.
Yes.
So, let's see, Melody Griffith.
She's also my favorite movie working girl.
Played Audrey Lulu Henkel. Not a lot I would have. I mean, she was doing more stuff at the time that would get her recognized. I hadn't seen a bunch of it. Cherry 2000 came out the year after this. Working Girl came out the year after that. You know, now, she was
there's
working.
A great movie.
Yeah, thanks. It's on Stars.
Cherry 2000.
Oh, Working Girl on Stars. He's
not talking about Working Girl. I like that.
Rude.
I couldn't tell you where in the 80s I first encountered Melanie Griffith. Because we were a cable family, watched like everything. I can't remember what I really remember her from. Cherry 2000, I know I saw and it kind of came and went in my head. Working Girl was not necessarily my genre when I was a kid, but I did see it at some point. But she was a name that I just kind of knew, like knew who she was. She was in, seemed like she was in everything for a minute or two, you know, just like Meg Ryan and what are you going to say?
She had that John Hughes look.
There was an actress that was very much like Melanie Griffith, and I was trying to come up with her name, and you just said it.
Yeah.
Meg Ryan.
I will say Melanie Griffith, I think, is not the most dynamic actor. She has a very specific kind of delivery, a really charismatic sense on screen, presence on screen. But this movie really, really enforced for me the fact that I never really felt that she was that deep as an act. I don't know.
Maybe it's just that I like that style.
No, I'm not. Yeah, I'm not criticizing anybody for liking it.
She was like the most dynamic character in the movie.
The character was great. Yeah. No, don't get me wrong. It's for the very beginning when she starts talking, it's got a flat sound. Sounds like she's acting to me.
Oh, yeah. It definitely sounds like she's acting.
That's what it is. You know, you compare that with, say, Jeff Daniels, who the only reason he ever sounds like he's acting is because you can tell there was a script involved. The man's natural.
I was about to say, he definitely felt more natural in his role than she did in her role.
But, yeah, also early in both their careers. So
that's fair.
Very early.
She was fine. And obviously this role suited her for the style of the character quite a bit.
That's
with
fair.
All its variables. Ray Liotta, who I already mentioned, was Ray Sinclair. And this was, again, this was his first feature film debut in a lead role.
This is before he was in Goodfellas.
Yeah, Goodfellas was in, you looked it up, it was 1990. So it was like years later. Field of Dreams was in 89.
Yeah.
He was recommended for the role in this movie by Melanie. She knew him from acting class.
An acting class, yeah.
A couple other kind of tidbits I picked up there. Chris Isaak was up for this role. But,
I saw that.
But dropped out to finish his self-titled second album. And I keep thinking I've seen him in something as an actor before. So because we all knew him as a musician at the time. But and that song that got on my nerves so bad. There's a fantastic cover of it that came out last year by a more contemporary band. I can't remember who off the top of my head. I think it was... I had it and I lost it.
That's okay. Happens. I got that song stuck in my head right now. So,
Kevin Kline was considered for the role of Charles.
I'm kind of glad they went with Jeff. Kevin, but I'm kind of glad they went with Jeff.
That would have been interesting.
Jeff had the right amount of awkward throwing in there.
I think Kevin actually would have been Kevin's good at awkward too when he wants to be.
He can be.
He I think he's
he actually, when he plays a character that has this level of neurotic to him, though, he goes overboard.
That's
I was going to say, Kevin Kline is known for his neurotic characters.
Yeah. And he could do a lot of the stuff that Jeff Daniels did in here where he was stammering through lines and stuff like that. It would have been great with Kevin, too. But when it came to where it, later in Act 2, because I really feel like this movie only had two acts. In Act 2.
This movie was two movies.
Yes. Yeah,
there's a pivot exactly. point.
I felt like Charles Diggs
and
Driggs.
One of them had a story.
In Charles Charles Driggs. That was intentional, I think. In the second half of the movie, I don't think Kevin Kline would have pulled it off as well.
I don't think so either.
When he tries to get that kind of deadpan, he gets a little too. Just rides the edge of being, you'll want to laugh at it. You know, yeah. There's something about
you didn't want to laugh at Jeff Daniels with sunglasses with little dudes on the side?
You wanted to laugh at the sunglasses, but it was because it also didn't really fit the feel of the scene as well. It felt obtuse, except for when he was in that store.
When he was stripping in the store, that was...
Except for that scene. I was about to mention that scene right there. And that's a scene that Kevin Kline would have done well. Anyway, I thought Jeff Daniels was great in it. Margaret Cullen, also worth a mention. She played Irene. She wasn't in a whole lot of the film, but she was pivotal. She was. We'd seen her before.
Which one's Irene?
The
Ray's girlfriend during the
dark-haired lady. Okay, I'm good.
Yeah.
We've seen her as Constance in Independence Day. She was in '94. It's one of the main characters.
I don't remember much of Independence Day. I'm not gonna lie.
She would have loved to have seen her more, but her character wasn't meant for more.
And she was, I mean, she was acting at the time, but I wouldn't have recognized her or anything. English teacher in Pretty in Pink, 3 Men and a Baby. She was in, I don't know. It's all way back there.
3 Men and a Baby. I need to watch that movie again.
Yeah, you should.
I like that one.
Let's see. $7 million box office. Opening weekend, it did 1.8, grossed 8.3 in the U.S. and worldwide. So, you know, wasn't exactly a successful
one. What did it cost?
$7 million.
Break even type of movie.
Yeah. That's what I've got. I know it doesn't feel like a lot, but there was a dearth of information available on this film out there. There wasn't a lot to work with. Most of the other actors in it weren't people I knew. I assume Richard may have some more to kind of talk about.
It's all those little data points. But it's like there were so many little roles. I mean, you know.
Yeah. And some of the roles that the director you filled with people that were just people he knew.
Well, it's like the two old ladies when he was getting his outfit together.
Oh, yeah. I
had one of them was like the director's mother and the other one was like somebody else on set's mother.
David Byrne's mom. He's a singer for the Talking Heads.
Oh, yeah, that's right. And because he had just done that video for them recently.
And the dude in the store clerk, the younger store clerk later, was wearing a Talking Heads t-shirt, too.
But the ladies, when they mentioned the thing, is like, you might want to rethink the handcuffs.
That was the point at which I realized he was still wearing the handcuffs.
So did any of you catch the John Waters? Probably
I did.
You don't know John Waters.
I was literally just getting ready to say, if we're going to talk about little roles.
Yeah, he was very much a cameo.
John Waters is the car salesman.
I love that. What would even know great is they were supposed to have gone through Baltimore. John Waters is Baltimore. It's kind of cool. He's in the show to bring that together. They're shooting locations. They never actually shot in Baltimore. They shot in New York, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania, and they shot in Florida.
That's funny. Kind of like skipped right past it. and this was before. I think John Waters hadn't been doing a lot of like appearances in films at this point, though. I mean, he hadn't started. Really.
Yeah, his films were.
It was before he started. Because he did a lot of directing.
He didn't have a lot of the bigger stuff.
He's primarily a director, but I think he has a role in every one of his films.
Yeah, in his films, yeah.
But it's interesting seeing him do a cameo in a film he had nothing to do with.
Right. I thought that was interesting because I was like, wait a second, is this a John Waters film? Because I saw
that
John
would
Waters.
Explain a lot, but no.
So let's talk about the two movie thing. I guess this is interesting.
Definitely two movie
thing. So I'm watching this movie, and I do want to get into why you picked this movie, Rich. I think there's a story there. Mostly because you told me there's a story there. I
have a tell.
I was watching this movie, and I didn't get around to it till last night. At the beginning of the movie, there's a lot of the little things that always kind of get under my skin when I see a lot of this happens in movies from the 80s, particularly comedies. There's kind of this stilted way of getting people into the action of the story because the meat of the story, the writers aren't thinking of it in terms of story. They're thinking it in terms of effect. So when you start, you have this kind of scene where the whole scene in the diner at the very beginning, which got things moving, felt very weirdly forced.
Very. It felt very forced.
And I don't even mean just like any one thing about it. I mean like every little thing about
the,
it,
the
right?
The entire process, all of the bit actors, the entire scene.
He had, him looking at the check, it going, you know that face and like, and I'm sitting here going, what did he just realize he doesn't have his wallet or something or what's going on? So then, okay, puts the check in his pocket and heads out the door. And then she confronts him. The way she follows him, confronts him, her delivery when she does that. And then her way of deciding, going from, you know, the 0 to 60 of, hey, I'm following this guy out the door to pick on him about this to see if I can push some buttons to, hey, get in the car and I'm going to ruin your life, was amazing, but... No. Forced.
It really wasn't, though. It went from, hey, I'm going to give you a ride. He hadn't even mentioned where he was going yet.
I'm
going to
give you a ride.
But I still love this. Okay. One of the things I've always had been told in life is if you're getting a lot of red lights when you're trying to drive somewhere, maybe you aren't supposed to be where you're going. That maybe fate's trying to tell you not to go there. And it's really interesting because right after that scene, she crosses the road no problem. He almost gets hit by several vehicles going by. Yes, it's a comedic scene, but in part, it's the universe saying you should really think about where you're going at this point because everything's going to change if you do this.
That's pretty good. That's kind of profound. I like that.
I was deeply affected by this
movie
at the point where I watched it.
But I understand where you're coming from.
And so I have overanalyzed every piece of this movie and the multiple times I have watched it.
That's fair. And I don't want you to feel like you got to be...
Including the nipples?
Well, I mean, you have to overanalyze the nipples, right?
No, you don't.
God, I'm so glad I have that on. I have that clip now. So that kind of started that opening beat kind of starts this sort of offbeat, which it really is offbeat.
It does set a tone.
And as you roll into it, things kind of tumble very quickly forward. Not quite stumble because it is fluid for 1 second to the next, but tumble like nothing.
It snowballs.
And fast. I mean, inside of now.
But it fits that road trip movie.
Oh, sure.
It's
which
an
is only 80s half the
road
movie.
Road trip sex comedy.
Which is only half the movie.
For 50 minutes.
Yeah, and that's what's great. So I'm sitting here watching this, and I've gotten maybe at this point 35, 40 minutes into the movie, and I'm sitting here, okay, I'm having trouble finding good clips anyway, so I'm kind of disgruntled. Because not only are clips all going to be just kind of dialogue, so I got to find stuff that's interesting.
But every
also,
other clip is Wild Thing.
But and they have constant music. The sound design. Now I will say, and I wish actually I'd bothered to pull clips of some of this but I was getting pretty tired by this point. The sound design in the movie is fantastic, especially for the time. A lot of the little sound effects and things that I hear in there, things and the ADR stuff is really good.
Oh yeah, they really focused on sound.
A lot of the edits, a lot of the visual stuff, not so much. I got punched in the head by a lot of the edits in this movie. It was just really kind of pissing me off. But
there were some weird transitions.
The first half of the movie does weird Star Wars type wipes. The second half of the movie doesn't. Yeah, no, I mean, it really does have a break in feel between the two parts.
And it's fluid enough that it didn't hit me in the head immediately. What happened was I the first like 35, 40 minutes in, I'm sitting here thinking, gosh, is the rest of the movie like this? You know, I'm not losing interest, but I'm not really invested, right?
10 minutes. Going, it took 10 minutes for me to lose interest.
Yeah, I know.
Completely.
I saw your text. and I'm sitting here and I'm watching and I'm just kind of waiting for whatever the next clip is going to be. And after a moment, I realize that I'm getting tense. There's this shift in the middle after Ray Liotta comes on the screen.
The moment he shows up, that's when the group, oh, I cannot remember their name. I should be able to remember the name. They did one of their own songs that was specifically picked for this, which had that darker, weirder feel to it.
The feelies.
That song switched. Instead of playing world music with a happy tune, that stops. All that played in the first half of the movie.
Yeah, there's any
stops.
Reggae in the second half
and
of the movie.
And actually, there's a lighting change at the exact same time where it goes to a darker lighting in the dance floor, and then Ray shows up.
I think this is
and
what.
And that's when the movie turns.
I think this is what drew the director to the project, personally. I think that the challenge of making that movie where it seems to be one thing and it flips in a way that feels. Not jarring, but significant. And it's hard to figure out exactly why at first. And I'm sitting here watching it and realized that as we're getting into the second half of the movie that I'm forgetting to stop and check for clips because I'm just
because it
watching
drags it. You into all these little characters interacting.
Now, I'm not going to say I loved it. I'll be upfront about that with you guys. I'm not going to say I loved the movie. This is not going to be a 5-star movie for me. I will say that I was surprised. I did. It was not the movie I expected going in, and it was not the movie halfway through that I expected after watching the first half of the movie. And the last scene of the movie, last sequence of the movie, rather, the climax of the movie, when we started this film, I couldn't have seen that being anywhere in the same movie. So that is my observation about Something Wild, is that in that way, it was truly unpredictable. I'm not sure how I feel about it. I can tell you I like Ray Liotta a lot.
I do like Ray Liotta.
Ray Liotta was the one redeeming actor in this movie.
I like Jeff Daniels
and
a lot,
and then
too.
He died.
That was one of the best things about
that
him.
Too.
Yeah, that was one of the best things about him. And he died well. It was a good scene.
Yeah, it really was.
Charlie.
that you see it and it's so much in his eyes.
Well, and
he's that, such a good actor.
That eye camera shot is something that he repeated in Silence of the Lambs, and he used a lot of that.
Oh, the director, yeah.
Yeah.
The close-up like that.
The director that became a shot that he used.
And Ray has gotten a lot of mileage out of those eyes. Years.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Richard, what was the deal here?
So, okay. I didn't end up seeing this until the 90s or whatever. Whenever it ended up on Cinemax or whatever channel it ended up on, Skinemax. Showtime or whatever.
Well, the rest of us didn't end up seeing it until this week, so that's fair.
The first time I saw it, I literally was flipping channels. I saw the end of the last diner scene, and then it panned over. And Sister Carol started singing that reggae version of Wild Thing.
That was my favorite thing in the whole movie right there.
And that song blew me away. I watched that. I spent the rest of the credits trying to figure out on the guide. Because back then we had to look things up on like a paper thing you had to buy at the grocery store. Anyways.
I vaguely remember them.
Yeah.
Or is it in the newspaper?
Yeah.
I don't really remember those.
I think it might still be in the newspaper.
It might still be in the grocery store, too.
We didn't have a kitty litter box at that point, so we didn't have a subscription. But I watched it. And then so the next time it came on, I'm like, I'm going to make a sense to do that because that song was amazing. You know how music-driven I am. So then I went back and watched it. Of course, it kind of caught me off guard and confused me a little bit because the first scene starts out like the last scene.
Yeah, the diner,
the
right.
Part
yeah.
of. And I'm like, okay, because it comes a bookend.
Right.
And still an interesting booking. So I'm sitting here watching this, and then it goes into this sexy adventure. And, of course, I'm a young 20-something going, all right, all
I'm
right.
I'm bored. I can, yeah.
And then she takes him to meet her parents, and I'm like, okay, Peaches. That was an interesting Peaches. Twist.
I loved Peaches.
I loved the scene where they're doing dishes.
Yeah, where he's actually talking. She's like, so how long have you actually known my daughter? And he's like, Mom knows. Mom knows.
But that never comes up. But he doesn't tell
Audrey
about it or anything. So.
Every character lives in their own bubble with their own pieces of information. And I like that.
Oh, and Max. I love
and,
Max.
And then when it took the turn and it went crazy, I had a hard time watching the end of the movie at that point, but I grew to where it was okay with that. But it was a bit of interesting action excitement, and it made for an interesting movie, and I loved Ray's acting.
So I looked up reviews. I wanted to see what people said on the internet about this after I had kind of formed an opinion. I found it interesting how many people there are that kind of talk really positively about how this movie represented the kind of cinema this was in the era that it was made and was just totally missed for, you know, one reason or another and another. And there's a lot of very complimentary feelings out there about it. And for a movie that I literally just was nowhere on my radar at all. And the reason that's relevant, guys, is because, like I said, I did live in a cable household. These kinds of movies were part of my growing up. Not because I sought them out, but because they were just in front of me all the time. You know, when you just turned on HBO every day and just kind of watched what happened, like you said, otherwise you had to go buy a TV guide.
Right.
You know, it just was easy, you know, to just kind of absorb films, whether or not they're the thing you would look for. And I've always enjoyed romantic comedies. I still do.
That's how I ended up watching several of the Friday the 13th.
I struggle with the idea that Now, maybe this one's maybe this is happening to me as I get older. I struggle with the idea that a lot of the early genre kind of romantic comedies, because I don't think that's a term we really had before the 80s, don't really have much comedy in it and don't really have very good romance in it. They're very kind of middle.
Thank you.
It's just something completely
Thank
different.
You.
It's like they see maybe it's just that they were confused at the time about except for the John Hughes kind of genre, which was also so much more than just romantic movies or comedies kind of built into it.
Those were dramas.
But they were. But they were also intended a lot of times to be funny and
dramedies.
But this movie is in the Criterion Collection.
Yeah, no, I get that. I saw that.
It's one of the most recent movies. There's a whole collection of really classic movies.
I mean, it's number 500 something, but but it's in the Criterion
Collection. It's still in the collection. It is one of the newer movies. One of the few color movies.
Look it up. You might find it interesting. Not terribly informative, probably. But
I watched a lot of those when they were added to Hulu. Man,
because here's the thing: Criterion is not going to represent a lot of the criteria that makes movies interesting to us today.
That's true,
and that's the truth.
But in my opinion, when I watch them go through this whole thing, going back and rewatching it, he was a man who was divorced, but not dealing with the fact that he was divorced. He was not ready to move on. In his mind, he just wanted to pretend like everything was normal.
Right.
Was he actually divorced or just separated?
She left him.
Were they just separated or divorced?
I think they were divorced, according to what the accountant said.
I don't think it's important in the story.
based on the furnitureless house and...
I think the divorce was done.
That's a good point.
But he was not ready to move on, and he was diving into his career at that point, but he wasn't really happy about that either. He wanted something to come in and shake up his life. That's why he went ahead and took the check. He wanted something where he broke the rules.
He's a rebel.
And so when she came along and offered him that, he went on that journey.
Offered?
Not
Is that what we're calling that?
Necessarily offered. She still kidnapped him, just saying.
But if
she offered him a ride to work.
If he had been any amount of not just giving in, and the universe tried to warn him too.
He was a mouse.
He gave in. In a normal circumstance, a person in that position would have said, no, I'm fine. I've already got a way to go.
Well, it depended on how much you wanted to get laid, I guess.
He didn't even know that was on the table until she kidnapped him.
I think you hope.
See, she did kidnap him. You just admitted
it. I'm not saying she did.
Because the point at where that switches gears just a little bit is when he gets to the hotel and he's like, that's the money for the Christmas fund. And she puts the choice in front of him. Says, are we really not getting a hotel? And at this point in the movie, I still thought, because remember, you've seen this 100 times. I didn't know. So at this point in the movie, I thought,
you didn't know that
she's
going to
do something terrible to him.
And you didn't know that she was.
And then she brings out the handcuffs. I'm like, we've seen this before. She's going to cuff into the bed, steal him blind, take off with the car, and the rest of the movie is going to be him trying to get his shit back or something. You know, that's...
Oh, that's a different movie. I didn't pick that one.
But that's the kind of stuff I was expecting by that opening section.
Yeah,
that was where I was at, too.
She was manipulating him. She took him off the street. She took, didn't give him any control or decisions about where they were going.
He didn't have any decisions at any point in the entire movie.
Well,
except for one.
He had decisions, and most of the time, the other option would have sucked ass for
him. But when he made the decision to go after her after Ray cut him loose, that was the decision that mattered.
That's the one decision he actually had.
Seriously following
that
he
liked her as a person, and that he... there was something there
did
that he was
he
interested
actually
in
like
that
her
he wasn't
or was it Stockholm syndrome because she did kidnap him.
I think he
you know Stockholm syndrome is not actually a thing. Anyways.
I think he liked the idea of her. Yeah, but in the movie world it is.
But as far as that goes, I mean they had that whole argument. She stopped the car, she kicked him out because she knew it wasn't going to go anywhere.
There's still a
and
relationship
then she still
science
came back,
to all this though.
And I think they earned that, but when they got back to their real lives, they still went their own way, and he was still searching for, he still wanted to see if it would work. And I think they obviously didn't just immediately get together and stay together. That would have been a bad idea. So they had to do that scene where they met back up again, and then they went off probably to figure out if it would work. Because he's already, he gave up that job, not because of her. Him and her weren't together at that point. He gave it up because that wasn't what he wanted out of life. And he knew it.
This movie tried to sell me on the idea that at the end of the movie, they get back together and ride off into the sunset and live happily ever after. This movie is fucking lying to me. That is not how that ends.
Oh, no. If there's a sequel of that movie, it would get even crazier. There's just no way. It's just ride off and happily married after.
Basically, what you're telling me without actually saying it out loud, which is what makes this statement funny, is that the subtext to this movie was a better story than the movie.
But it's all there.
You guys get what I'm saying?
If you're just watching
another 10 times, I think you'll get it.
Yeah. No, it is there.
No.
It is there, but I think it's there in terms of the actors going, so what's my motivation? I don't think it's there on the screen. It's all underneath that. Now, you can definitely see the characters acting in the way that you're talking about and very clearly making decisions and the movements of the movie working that direction. You know, but it isn't spelled out. I could have interpreted what we saw very differently, I think, legitimately. And that's fine.
Probably. But I mean, I've seen too many of the clues time and time again.
Of course you have. For example, when he decides to leave his job at the end, and I read a review that said the same thing you just said about him, you know, her helping him realize, the experience with her helping him realize that he didn't like his job.
He already knew he didn't like it. But in the first section
of the movie, I saw a guy who was nervous about his job, but he was addicted to his career. Maybe because that's ambitious. Yeah. Maybe because I'm a business-minded person, I didn't see that as a huge like detractor. If you really aren't happy in life, find a different path. But I'm not the kind of guy that needs a woman to take you off the street and, you know. But at the end of the movie, when he makes that choice and is sitting there going, I don't really want
to get to the bed, screw your brains out.
Yeah. And well, you know, it takes what it takes. But at the end of the movie, when he leaves his job, I'm sitting here thinking, you know, this could literally be because he just killed a guy.
Yeah.
He just went through the most traumatic experience of his life in his house after they thought they'd won.
There is, you know, and
this all happened. And it's like, I could definitely see, no matter how he felt up to that point, thinking at that point in his life, you know what? I'm questioning everything. I don't want to be the person I was yesterday anymore.
But if the movie had them just go together at that point instead of going their own way, I would have absolutely hated. The fact that they caught up later would have
maintained his milquetoast kind of, you know, presence from the early part of the movie where he didn't make decisions.
I do have one more interesting story, because this is something I did not realize until yesterday. Because it's the one piece of the movie that I could never piece together in my head, and now I know why.
Wait, there was just one?
when he's in Florida and he talks to that guy that gives him that cure for his hangover. The guy says it's better to be a live dog than a dead lion.
Mm-hmm.
And then that line's repeated later in the movie.
Charlie, I'm like, is
this supposed to be an underlying theme? Because I'm not really completely picking that up, but it doesn't hurt. But it's I'm not completely picking that up. That actor who was hired for that one scene was actually like an art professor in Tallahassee.
Okay.
And he just said, I just think, if I'd come up to a stranger like that and I'd met and got that much information out of him and was given him, I'd probably give him some weird words of life advice. And the director's like, all right, go for it. They didn't tell Jeff that he was going to do that. Okay. So Jeff's reaction of, oh, you're telling me that.
Was genuine.
Right? Okay. Was a genuine surprised reaction. Because he didn't know that was even going to be said.
I don't even remember the scene.
And so when Jeff at the end of the movie is packing up the stuff, he tells the director, he's like, I want to do a callback to that phrase. And that's why he says that phrase to the guy before he leaves the office. It better be a...
And see, when he said that, I was like, okay, live dog I get
a dead
it.
Lion.
Raise the dead lion. I get it.
So the best piece of writing in the movie was an ad-lib?
It was written by an art director.
Oh, my God.
An ad-lib by an extra.
Raise the dead lion. I didn't get that. Oh, yeah. Good point.
Wow.
So it was an interesting thing.
I can see pieces of this movie making sense in a very, very limited spectrum. In the sect that there is relationship science behind this. You are going to be more attached to someone if you go on like a date that has multiple locations than if you go on a date to one thing. Like, say you go bowling, that's okay. Well, but if you go to like dinner and a movie, that's two locations. You're going to feel a deeper connection to that particular romantic experience.
Where you create an artificial relationship with someone where she kept saying his name over and over again.
Well, and every 20 seconds,
Charlie, what do you think? Charlie,
wasn't just her.
Ray kept doing the same thing. Well, he was also manipulative.
Mm-hmm. Ray had this charisma to him.
And the time
he really did.
Richard.
Did.
Richard.
And he was reminded before every scene that his character just felt like he owned the world and he was happy about everything. His character wasn't motivated by being evil. His character was motivated by, I'm charismatic and happy and everybody loves me.
I really actually liked that aspect of the character and the way it played off, because the way he makes Charlie like him just instantly.
Mm-hmm. And, he makes everybody like
him. And Charlie just couldn't see the danger, the undercurrent, you know, which...
That girl would paint his ticket.
And for some reason, right, Audrey couldn't bring herself to tell him, hey, look, this guy is really bad news.
She knew he wouldn't fall for it. She didn't want to talk about him.
At all. She wanted him to disappear.
But because she tried to get Charlie away from Charlie,
the first thing she said
to Ray's little charisma game
when she saw Ray was, we need to get out of here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but she didn't say, it's my husband, we need to get out of here.
I get it. And that's
bad news, who will probably kill you.
Audrey keeps stupid secrets.
Yeah,
she never really told him anything.
Not until she had to.
That was one of the other things. I mean,
yeah, including call me Audrey.
But yeah. At the time I watched that, I was going through a life where I was trying to find a balance between my id and ego. And that's kind of what those base characters are playing, the id and the ego running off together. And the id kind of wins.
There's a
terrifying prospect.
You've never had your id rape your ego?
No. Can't say I have.
Not on screen.
There were no handcuffs involved.
Sorry.
More's the pity.
I've got a set if you need them.
No, thank you. It's fine.
The identity seesaw is, you know, one of the things that makes this story kind of work. I don't necessarily know that I'd have executed it this way. Again, I don't feel like, other than the first part of the movie, that forced stuff I was talking about, I don't feel that carried through.
I do.
I feel like it was that way at the beginning of the movie, and because I'm not one of those people who sees things and that sets a tone, I was still watching for it, though, because performances matter a lot to me. I have a tendency, especially if I'm not drawn into a film, I tend to be very analytical about the way it's written, the way it's shot, you know, and I look at the way people perform these parts and how immersive that is or how compelling it is. And once we're past that and you kind of accept the idiom, this is mostly Lulu. Once you kind of accept the Lulu, the play between the characters does flow nicely. Part of that being that Charlie is so I can't remember though if you used a specific word for it, Vanessa, or not, but he very much is the lamb in this. All through that section, he starts by just capitulating, and then he gets excited, and then he does this kind of weird sort of balance between the two. The rest of that first act, right? He is capitulating. He is not making the choices.
The entire half of the movie, he's the chick of the film. He's the cardboard.
Yes,
one.
But he. But at the same time, he's getting excited about it all the time because he doesn't like who he is, because he needs this in his life.
The last half of the movie, she's cardboard.
Boy, howdy. What the hell happened to Lulu? It's like Ray just castrated her.
Yeah.
And that's part of it.
It's called an abusive relationship.
She felt trapped.
And I mean, even in the scenes at the end where she's just shouting, Charlie, help, and waiting to run down a hall till Ray has a chance to trip her, and then falling and then laying there and yelling, and just all these little things that are like, and you're right, I get that.
Yeah.
It's not probably unrealistic at all. But it felt so frustrating because she was such a willful character early in the movie. It's like once you brought Ray into the picture, one of the things it did was sap that out of her.
And that's why when people break up, you don't keep bringing up their ex to them, because that's not who they want to be anymore.
Depends on if you were the dumper or the dumpy.
Just saying.
Or there's some people that, I mean, that's the way they deal with the trauma.
That's fair.
By taking command of it all the time, talking about it constantly. You know?
But yeah, I mean, that's
true.
That's true.
But I always saw this as basically four different chapters in a big movie with bookends on the end.
You got four chapters out of this?
I have a few clips.
Yes, because each of those halves you end up doing.
I'm impressed at how long
there's like two different pieces to it.
I was worried this would be a short show because I didn't have as much material at the top, but I'm impressed with how long we've managed to talk before we get to this section of the film of the show.
Yeah, I really know a lot about the movie.
let's do a few clips here. Let's see. Closet Rebel.
I don't know how this happened. I got a lot of things on my mind, you know, business things, and I simply forgot. That's all.
You deliberately walked out without paying that check.
I did not. Here, come on, take the money and, you know, and keep the change and.
Fine, maybe you'd like to tell a cop.
No! Don't. Just...
Let me guess. sometimes you don't pay for your lunch. Or maybe you steal the occasional candy bar or newspaper. You're a closet rebel.
Closet rebel. Okay, so if that's what we're establishing as the relationship between these characters at the outset, what? What was her motivation exactly?
I have no idea.
So
I almost think that it started with just, he's cute. I should troll him and then fuck him and then leave him.
I should stare at him obsessively until I see him slip up, and then I'm going to call him on it.
It was literally impulse.
In the scenes immediately following this, I thought she was a con artist about to just take him as a mark.
Yeah, you know, take his kidneys or something.
Steal everything he had. It's true. He didn't really have much, obviously, when he went there. Plastic? I mean, kidneys. Yeah, I didn't think of kidneys. I'm just not as... you got me, kid.
She did spend most of her life at that point. Her apartment's just filled with all that tribal art.
It was very colorful.
Very colorful. Mm-hmm. It was her escaping from the box that she felt like she had been put in between growing up and her husband.
My wife, who was watching this, you know, she was trying to go to sleep, but she couldn't. So she was watching this with me.
Sorry.
She commented that her favorite thing in the movie was Lulu's car seat covers.
Yes.
And then we got to the point in the movie where Lulu abandons the car and she's just like, I'm done with this movie. There's nothing good left in it.
I mean, she did pull out voodoo stuff before she raped him on the hotel bed.
Yeah, some of that stuff was... that was kind of cool.
I don't think I qualified really as rape
if it's willing. No,
there was consent. It may have been
was
uninformed.
Was there actually consent?
It may have been uninformed consent, but there was consent.
In the 80s, it was definitely consent. That's the problem.
Plenty of time to leave that room before...
He used
there
the Christmas Club money
involved.
To pay for the hotel room.
That doesn't mean that he approved to the sex.
He approved to the handcuffs when she brought them
out. He did approve to the handcuffs.
She asked him.
She
you
did
know.
Ask.
He, okay,
he
fair,
capitulated.
I'll give you
I mean, he obviously didn't know what he was getting into, and you could tell that there was some reluctance there.
There was excitement, too, though. Yeah. That was the point.
He didn't Why? Know she was going to call.
He
did not consent.
No.
He did not consent to her calling his boss.
No, that stuff was, yeah, that was,
I mean, that was wild 80s.
That's not rape at that point, but it is definitely something seriously mind fucky about it.
I think the wild 80s shenanigans.
It still had a very forced consent feel to it.
I think the wild.
I understand why you got that out of the scene. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, you're good. I think the wild 80s shenanigans is an excuse that needs to die, though, personally.
It really does. It's Weinstein rapey, I get it.
On the plus side, we're not in the 80s anymore.
That's fair. And we're looking at this through a lens of the.
And that's
woke. 34 years.
Thank you. I was going to say, the enlightened view of today.
Our cultural mores shifted somewhat.
You could not remake this movie today because it would not work.
This was still the Sam and Diane era of relationships.
Yep.
Think about it.
I don't know what that means.
I know.
Cheers.
I was like, did you mean Jack
I've
and
heard
Diane?
Of Cheers.
Wait, which she still doesn't know what you mean. It's okay. Cash flow.
Problem. Dad. Possible cash flow problem.
No, there's no problem. There's no problem at all. I don't think that there is anything to worry about. I mean, come on, fellas. I mean, do I look like the kind of guy who would run out on a check? I mean, come on. You guys.
That was choice, Jeff Daniels, right there. I had to capture that.
Yeah.
But another example of just the kind of thing she's sitting out there just waiting, watching him,
that
gesturing at him.
Possibly my favorite scene in the entire movie.
And then when he pulls it later on.
It was a strong contender on my list as well.
Pulls it later on Ray.
Right.
Although I have to say, Dad was one of my favorite characters.
Yes.
He was just a bit part just because the way he answered the phone was great.
Exactly.
Mom
feel.
And Dad's, this is Dad.
Who was that actor?
I have no idea.
There were three actors in there that were really good. Two of them I should know the names of and I don't, and I hate myself for that.
But what was his name? The
cook.
No, later. The convenience store. The guy at the convenience store. What was his name?
He kept repeating it. Yeah, I don't remember.
Because he had that thing where he got people's names off their name tags. And
I may have that clip.
But he was my favorite guy in the whole movie. I loved that dude.
I mean, he was good at recommending clothing.
I mean, yeah. What's that called? The add-on selling?
Upsell. Because
upsell, yeah.
He was the upsell king that day, man.
Because he needed to buy all this
Hey, do you need
stuff.
This? Hey, do you need this?
How about
hey,
socks?
As long as the credit card goes through, I don't care.
Kenneth Utt was dad. He was a producer.
Yes.
He was a producer?
Yeah.
Okay, that's
I swear I've seen him in other things, though.
Cool. Maybe he has big parts awesome. In all of the things that he produces.
Hard to say. It just felt like looking at the trivia and stuff like that was very much like, you know, the director didn't necessarily want to go through the casting process. You said it was an indie film, you know, so we'll just, you're putting money in the movie. Would you like a part? You know, hey, mom, I need somebody in a scene. It works for me. Company Plastic.
What's wrong? I'll tell you what's wrong. Company Plastic. Valid company credit cards. They were in my wallet. Well, that was in my jacket. Well, it's gone. My MCI number, my access card to get me into my own building. I mean, who God knows who's got that. My Christmas Club voucher. Oh, crap. If I don't get my wallet back, you know what?
What?
I'm fucked.
Charlie, I got it. I got your wallet.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that was Charlie's only obscenity in the entire movie. Or
it
at least
was
up until that
because
point.
It showed his breaking point. That mm-hmm. point where he finally is like, all right, no, I was along for the ride. I'm good, but we have crossed too many lines.
It's gone too
I
far,
have gone
finally.
Too far.
Yeah.
And she's like, we haven't gone too far. Here's your actual stuff.
I'm starting to realize I don't think I have a single clip that isn't Jeff and Daniel's going nuts over something.
I'm okay with that.
That's okay. Most of the movie right there.
Making sure. I mean,
no, it's not. It's
I'm exaggerating.
First act.
I'm exaggerating.
The second act, he's not going nuts.
No,
the second act, he has done gone nuts.
I was going to say, I think he's arrived. I think that's the point at which the story changes.
Irene.
Got a light?
Well, I mean, no, I don't know. I don't think so.
I'm Irene. I don't believe in name.
Thanks. You.
Oh, right. Charlie, I, never had many concrete convictions about him one way or another.
You're Audrey's husband, aren't you?
Yeah.
You don't sound too convinced.
I can hardly believe it myself. We haven't known each other very long.
You don't exactly seem her type.
Yeah, well, what can I tell you?
I love the fact that at this point in the film, he's made that kind of switch to, I'm just comfortable being this. We're just
I mean, he's skating. In another state. He was kidnapped into another state. His options are that or find a way back to New York.
And he could have, but he didn't want to go back to that New York
life. How easy is it to find
a
way?
Well, nowadays.
From Pennsylvania.
He was given the option to take a bus home.
As someone who's been dragged halfway across the country and left out in the middle of nowhere, let me tell you, it's not hard to do.
Even in 1986?
I did it in the late 90s, but whatever.
I will defend him
it was
in
a little
this
easier
point
when you have
because he was given several opportunities to get out of this.
Yeah.
But Charlie is not an active persona in the
exactly.
first half of the movie.
Exactly. He does not take an active role in his own life.
In fact, the choices are given almost entirely for exactly that reason, to take the danger out of making the wrong choice in that moment.
Because every step was a step away from the life he wasn't really happy with to begin with.
Do you actually pick that up on your first viewing? Because I sure as hell didn't.
There's lots of things I don't pick up in movies on my first viewing, let me tell you.
I didn't until I read reviews. And then I think there must be people like Richard who watched
it. It took
a
few times for me to actually get this to be on my
list.
Like
I said,
like literally,
the subtext is good. It just doesn't come through in the film. That's what I'm saying. I think those story elements are actually pretty strong. They're good character motives. They're interesting character studies. They're not on the film.
He's given choices to go back to his old life, but he is such a passive character for the first half that he's literally just rolling with the punches.
I think he was in character at that point.
But is that really a well-written character?
It kind of feels like where I'm at in life.
I don't know about well-written in terms of character.
Like, it feels like a cheaply written story.
I think it feels real,
though.
Well,
that's just lazy,
I'm not sure about that.
I think it feels real. I think it feels genuine. Not in the way that this is the kind of story we want to watch, but in this is the way people really behave.
No, that's true.
You know, I tend to look at characters as character studies because, well, psych. You know, that's a lot
realistic.
Of what I enjoy in a movie.
Maybe that's why I'm not a huge fan.
But he really realistically, the choice that he made, because his life wasn't anything to go back to. His house
was a VP. He had money. He had a house.
And that all obviously afforded him nothing because he lost his family, lost his pride. had, you know, couldn't let go of that stuff. He had no joy. So the job was all he had. So when she took that away from him, she didn't do it in a vacuum. She called his boss when she was about to go down on him, and then he went with it.
That was a power trip move.
Yeah, it was. But
it is abusive.
But he did the he had the conversation with his boss in that moment, and he made the choice. And after that moment, he had the choice. He had the option, rather, the opportunity on more than one occasion to walk away.
And it was definitely abusive behavior.
Yeah, oh, exceedingly.
Like, that bothered the shit out of me.
It was manipulative.
Just as easily had said, I am being held against my will. I'm in a hotel in...
He was a passive character. I would argue that he would have realistically made that decision.
Yeah, I would argue that the Charlie we're looking at that point literally could not have done what you're suggesting.
Exactly.
And she was counting on that.
She didn't want to go back to
like
that
it's still abusive relationship behavior.
You both have very valid points because nothing that was going on there was okay.
No.
But it turned out to be good for Charlie.
Nobody in this story is a hero, guys.
No.
And that's part of my problem.
Dot, played by Sister Carol, she's a hero.
No.
Anyway,
the woman who sang "Wild Thing" at the end.
Character, it doesn't matter.
I was going to say the grocery store clerk. He was a hero. He was my hero.
He was a good hero too. He was a good hero. John Waters was just greedy.
But yes.
He was a slime ball, which is very John Waters
and very used car salesman.
Let's see. Let's meet Ray.
Oh, do we have to?
I'm going to tell you something, Charlie. When I used to do this for a living, I used to pull a job at some liquor store, run around the corner, pull off the ski mask I was wearing, put on a different coat, and walk right back into the place I just robbed. Oh. Man, it was wild. Those people would be so flipped out they wouldn't know their own mothers. I'd be standing there when they described what happened and who robbed them. Half the time they thought it was some spook that did it.
Glad he died.
They're gonna be seeing your face on a videotape, pal. It just might be you they get.
That laugh drives me nuts. Ray Liotta did it in all those mob stuff, too.
I mean, that's the laugh he used for everything, yeah.
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 I think that's Ray Liotta.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think it's him acting, though. He, because I've seen him, I can't remember what I saw.
Have you seen him actually laugh?
But I've seen him in more recent years playing roles where he felt a little more genuine. I think he's gotten better as an actor.
My favorite Ray Liotta movie is No Escape.
No Escape is good.
Never seen it.
But my favorite is still Goodfellas. My favorite is still Goodfellas.
I'm not a big fan of mob movies.
I'm not a big fan, but
I've seen Goodfellas, though.
That's good. See, wife.
When did your wife leave you?
I can't imagine where you heard that, Ray. That's absolutely ridiculous.
Tell me, Charlie.
It's not true. I have a wife. I have a family. I have a... Forget it.
Charlie.
No! Last September.
Last September? Really good liar, Charlie.
Ooh. Charlie, this is Audrey. Audrey, this is Charlie.
That laugh.
Can I?
Yes.
What gall on her
mm-hmm.
to call him out for lying
mm-hmm.
when she was married the whole time?
At this point,
mm-hmm.
when she's been married, she didn't even give him his real name. And the fact that he's not actually married
makes ruined it everything
worse
for her
somehow.
Yep. Yeah.
Which says a lot. Again, the subtext of her character is more interesting than what we see on the screen.
That's horrible.
It is.
She
even and it came down to, I mean, you
explicitly
can
makes
so
the comment later. I hook up with a married guy and he's not even married.
Yeah. That meant that was part of that was important to her manipulation in her head, was that he was somebody she was getting to cheat on a wife.
Thank you for calling it manipulation because it definitely was.
Blatantly.
Yeah.
Boldly. Yeah. That's
unapologetically. Like him, she wanted to break away from his previous life. She had a weird plan to do it.
And the fact that the movie doesn't tell you that until you're halfway through the movie
at the reunion,
and so you think he's married. We all think he's married. He's not just lying to her; he's lying to us,
right?
And that makes me hate him.
Yeah, it's the consciousness of the character at that point is even when they're in the hotel room, you're definitely thinking, "Oh, he's
married. He has
pretends to call his wife."
Yes,
mm-hmm. I always pick that up as denial.
The
second time through.
This movie may say more about Richard than about these characters, actually, I'm starting to think.
I do think it was denial, too, because he had to be forced by Ray to say...
He didn't want to admit that he wasn't married anymore. And the accountant said at the high school reunion that Ray had told Ray that he had taken it very hard and he was very happy to see he was happy with Audrey.
Particularly in the context of the time, though, married man meant a lot of things in this type of situation because it meant unavailable. It meant there was no chance of building some level of commitment or something that she could get involved in this, and there would be no point in which he would, you know, unless he was the kind of guy who fell so head over heels that I'm going to leave my wife for you, whatever, whatnot.
And kids.
And she was going to make sure that never got to that point, obviously. That's part of the manipulation is like, I want what I want out of this right now, which, remember, at that point in the movie, I still thought was a con game. But even when it turned out that she was doing this for her own reasons.
Yeah. Get what she want. Get she somebody was to go just, reunion
She
with
wasn't
her.
Looking for something and then get serious. Rid of
him. No.
You know, so when it turned out to be, you had to go through everything they went through in this movie for it to turn into something serious. Because she wasn't capable of that as the person that she was during this film. It's another one that you could argue definitely only has a happy ending up until the credits roll, which is fair since the credits roll with the song. She sings through the credits. Yeah. Broken Nose. I liked the line in here.
I used to spar around a lot in the joint. It was just me and a bunch of the brothers. They all thought I was crazy. By the time I got out of there, though, they all had respect for me, Charlie. Got my nose broke 3 times in 3 years, but the hell? Broken nose ain't gonna kill you.
No, it won't kill you, Ray. Violence never solved anything. Goes around, comes around. You're gonna learn that someday.
And
violence did solve that problem. I'm just gonna point that out.
Yeah, I was gonna violence say violence solves everything. This problem.
But he was completely lying. He made that comment about his nose broke 3 times, and then this camera pans back to him, and I look at him, and like, that man's nose has never been broken a day in his life. He's lying to me. But this movie's all about people lying to people, so, you know.
Truth.
But,
and they're actors. They're not the actual people. I'm just saying.
But it's not that hard to use prosthetics or makeup to make someone's nose look like it has been broken and healed 3 times. I mean, they could have done it.
I don't know if you hire Ray Liotta at this age and then...
rough up his nose.
Yeah.
No, obviously you don't.
He was so pretty.
He was.
He was so pretty.
Here's the scene you're waiting for,
kid. He still is, kind of.
Cool.
Yeah, let's tell you what. Let's put a shirt on.
All right.
Okay. And how about a hat?
You got it.
Okay.
Right here for you.
And do you have any trousers?
Trousers? No trousers. How about some shorts?
Shorts?
Yeah.
Let's go with some shorts.
How about large, shirt? Right?
Large? Yeah.
Yeah.
Large. Yeah.
Right here.
Sounds good.
Okay.
Fix me up.
How about some socks?
Socks?
Yeah.
Put some socks on
there.
Right.
There you go.
Sounds good.
Fix me up, Nelson.
Hey, Charlie.
Nelson.
Attempt to be cool.
Attempt to be cool. Nelson.
I love that. He's such a stripping down right in the gas station.
So this was after the turning point in the film, obviously. After Ray's true colors emerge, after he gets separated from Audrey and Ray and then starts following him. And then after this is the sequence where he ends up confronting him in the diner, pulling the same trick that Audrey did on him and leaving.
That whole scene was so
and the
weird,
movie would have been over right there if he hadn't given Ray the information about where he lived when they were being buddy-buddy. So, I mean, the information that Ray pulled out of him while they were being cool and hanging out in the car.
Got him his name so that he could use.
Got him his information so that he could track him down, figure out where he lived. I mean, so everything would have been over at that point, and it would have been just kind of a soft denouement, but we got the nice, psycho killer climax instead.
I did enjoy the fact that Ray went to her apartment. He actually went back to his hotel room to get that pamphlet from the thing to get her address because he assumed she was just going to go to her place and that she would have ditched him by then.
No, just doing what he could to
track
her
down. And then when she wasn't there, he's like, I know where she's at. And then he used that other information.
But I have to say, I didn't capture a whole lot of clips at this point because things got really kind of noisy or they were short or I was just kind of drawn into the story.
There's a lot of background noise in this movie.
And the tension was ripe in here. A lot of the sequences, I think
that's something I like about it.
A lot of the sequences with Ray, particularly, obviously, were they had, and it wasn't like infrasound like we talk about in a lot of the movies we do now. But they did, they still used a lot of like electronic noises and stuff to kind of, you know, synthesize the noises and stuff to kind of help ratchet tension. And
I think I just didn't pick up on that at all. Gotcha.
You had checked out like 40 minutes prior, or an hour and 40 minutes prior.
Yeah,
that's probably true.
You know, when at some point you're watching it because you're going to be expected to talk about it the next morning.
Yeah.
Not for any kind of apprehension of what the movie's going to give you.
Yeah.
I get it. So the entire sequence at the end, I don't really have anything from because it was been pretty impossible to clip. I have one more thing for you, I think.
How do you figure a guy like Ray Sinclair?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Awkward silence.
Lots of it.
Stay in touch.
Yeah.
Promise?
Promise. Hey, Larry. It's better to be a live dog than a dead lion.
Just been good working with you, Charlie.
Just that line. Larry, also kind of a throwaway character who turned out to have more in the movie going on than...
Man, I forgot about all the awkward silence in that scene.
Pass information on to Ray.
That's another thing. The dialogue in the movie wasn't bad. The writing, as far as the scripted writing, the dialogue wasn't bad. Vanessa, since you're going to have that reaction to anything positive I say about the film. But seriously, I liked a lot of the turns of phrases. I thought the writers did a good job of putting words out there. But a lot of the conversations felt less movie magic and more just the way people talk.
Which is something I think kind of like, actually.
It draws me to it.
It's actually not something I like as well, but I definitely can acknowledge it. It's, you know, it feels real. Like that awkward silence.
And the juxtaposition. Thank you. The
welcome
juxtaposition of the real conversation in the way that feels kind of real world versus the purely fantasy element of what's going on in the movie was one of the things that I reacted well to, I think.
Cool. Goodbye.
Never said goodbye.
I never wanted to say goodbye. On a ride?
Sure, Audrey.
I like the music. I like the music in there. I don't like his line there. Sure, why not? It feels very much like it's supposed to be a callback to the beginning of the movie, the way he was.
Yeah,
it was.
And I just for me it felt yeah.
Anyway, it's the anyway. Other end of the piece of the book.
Shall we talk about it? You guys ready?
Sure.
Thumbs up, thumbs down, Rich.
Okay. So I really like this movie. I'm obviously the one that picked it, and I am like very intimately familiar with the movie. I have always said, if you are going to be critical, you can always find a good thing to say about bad movies and a bad thing to say about good movies. So at that point, yeah, I should come up with a thumbs down, but yeah, this is going to be another weak one for me. On my thumbs down, I'm just going to roll with when the movie gets dark, it gets dark. There are times I still have trouble watching parts of it. I only get through them because I know the offender in them actually gets his due. Thumbs up. I enjoy the shifting styles of the plot and the music and how everything all comes together and how the adventure plays through like chapters for me. I like the different parts of basically a road trip style movie, and each piece has its own look, sound, and feel, especially between the first and second half. I love it. I mean, at the time I met this movie, I like I said, was fighting my own id-ego balance, and it's an interesting play against those two types of characters, the one that just wants to have fun and the one that wants to be responsible, and making that choice between the two. I love the chaos. I love how the characters expose themselves and open up and eventually find what they need in the end. This is a top-rated movie in my book, and I am giving it my 5 stars.
Characters exposing themselves.
Oh, that too.
Boobies.
Nipples.
Vanessa, those things have nothing to do with you. Your name is next in the call sheet here.
That's okay.
So, we all have nipples.
So I'm going to start with thumbs up because that's a really short list. I liked the music. The music was pretty. Thumbs down, if I ever see this movie again, it's too soon. I had to look at how I had rated other movies to figure out how I was going to rate this movie. This one is definitely 0 stars.
Ouch. Okay.
Damn, dude. That follows through with what you, you know, your discussion of the matter. It's obviously thought out.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I've been Debbie Downer, but that's because I really didn't enjoy this movie.
Jason. That says a lot.
I'm sorry, Richard.
I love Richard. I did not love his choice. And I think talking about it today has actually made me like it a little bit more because of all of the subtext conversation. And I can see that. I can see where that is. But I couldn't see it last night when I was watching the movie. And that's a problem for me.
Mm-hmm.
That's definitely a major thumbs down. Is 90% of this movie is subtext that you have to watch and watch and
read
watch.
Between the lines, so to speak, yeah.
And you have to come up with it for yourself. And I like movies that tell me what's going on. I didn't like the people. I didn't like, you know, it's not the actors. I didn't like the characters. I didn't like Charlie. I didn't like Lulu. I liked Ray until he turned into a psycho killer.
You liked Ray until you didn't.
Until I didn't, right. You know, it's like, hey. Which,
to be fair, it was Ray's job. Right. That was his role in the movie.
That was his job. Oh, and then all of a sudden, I didn't like Ray anymore. it was just, and also I felt it was disjointed as opposed to chapters. It felt like more than one movie. I think if it had been two movies, if they had made the road trip sex comedy,
that would have been a very boring road trip.
It would have been, you know, they would have had to add something to the back 45 minutes of it.
Or to the front 45 minutes to, you know, introduce characters better.
Yeah, that too. And then if they had made the psycho killer movie, great. You know, but putting them both in the same movie just didn't seem right to me. Things I did like. I liked the music a lot. I liked the visual style of the movie. The way they filmed it, it was, you know, I liked the weird transitions and stuff. It felt like an 80s movie to me. And I dig that kind of idea. Overall, and I've been going back and forth on this.
I can tell. It seems to be stressing you out.
It is, because I don't... The one thing to remember is that this is not a judgment of person. It is a judgment of movie.
We are really trying to protect you, Rich.
I didn't rip off the Band-Aid, yeah. Dude.
I think Rich understood.
Two.
I think Rich understood walking into this, that he was picking something we wouldn't normally have shown much interest in as a group. So there was always that chance that people were going to have negative reactions to it.
I am kind of curious. Did you actually spend a lot of time thinking about how you expected people would react to the movie before you just settled on this movie?
In a way, I've been thinking through the movie. It's one of those things where I was like, if I'm going to pick one of my favorite movies that I think we can and have stuff to talk about, I think this is one of those movies. But I, like I said, maybe it's because I'm too close to the material. I personally identify with all three of those characters as parts of myself.
Well, you definitely succeeded in giving us something to talk about.
Those three characters as part of, as different aspects of the same psyche, is a much more interesting movie. So,
yes.
This is actually an allegory for one person.
But no, I felt that was there. Now, honestly, as far as people talking about people and plots, Working Girl would have been a better choice. This is still my second choice. And
what
I
just said, all the way to Charlie killing Ray the way he did by surprise, all part of the same psyche.
I mean, Ray practically killed himself.
Right. Yeah. Sorry. I think it's interesting. I understand the consternation, though. I think that's a fair analysis for you, Jason. I don't think you have anything to be worried about there. I doubt Rich is, you know, crying too much on the inside yet.
I mean, bad means bad. I mean, it means there were, like, not things. I mean, now I also know not to bring this movie up as a movie item for Vanessa because absolutely nothing redeemable for her. So, you know.
Well, you said
it
this
had good music.
You mentioned that this felt like an 80s film.
I could buy you the soundtrack.
I would have been fine with that.
You mentioned that this film felt like an 80s film.
Missing a lot of the music. Yeah. Looked like one.
And I bet you anything that if this movie had been made even like 10 years later, much less today, if this script had been bandied about and picked up, they would have changed the order of operation a lot.
I think so too.
And you would, I doubt that what drew the director to this film actually would have drawn a director to this film 10 years later. Part of that, I think, was the challenge, like I said, of kind of doing that tonal shift in this movie and making it work. And that's why I think the extra focus on the callbacks to the beginning, the book ending in it and all that, is to kind of really highlight the fact that this was one story, despite that tonal shift. And I felt like the tonal shift, personally, I felt like the tonal shift was well done. It took me by surprise, which was the point. I wasn't ready for it. So there you go. Kid.
Hi. So I kind of read this movie as the poor man's Me, Myself, and Irene.
I really mean the whole psyche, all characters.
and that comparison came up while I was watching it, because I love that movie.
And I like that one considerably more than this one.
I cannot say I loved it, but this is a transformation movie. This movie tells the story of a person being broken down and reconstructing himself with or without his consent into a person who is closer to who he wanted to be in the first place. And that's something that resonates with me. So I can't completely bag on this movie. I didn't enjoy the first half of it. I kept asking myself two questions. I was like, is there a story in here somewhere? And how is this one of Richard's favorite movies?
That's not the only. The other question I heard coming from the next room was, why aren't we watching Book of Boba Fett?
Well, that was something else. Yeah, because that was our original plan for the evening, was to watch the Book of Boba Fett. And then I remembered, I can't
do
that.
We're doing the podcast a day early.
Yeah. I'm down to 8 hours before I have to get up, and I still have to watch something wild. So, sorry, babe, we're not watching Book of Boba Fett tonight. We're going to watch this instead. She's like, okay, I'll check it out. And then she checked out. Yeah. She did not like
the She's even more, she's more critical all. Than you are, though.
But she, her issues were the characters. She could not stand the characterization or what was going on with them. Like I said, her favorite thing about the movie was Lulu's car seat covers, which
they
she loved.
Colorful.
Which and means then when, she didn't even make it to Lulu's apartment.
When Lulu abandoned the car and left him behind, she's like, I'm done. They just took out the only thing in this movie I could stand. It's over. My reaction was not quite that vitriolic. I can't say I loved the movie, but it definitely, by the time it started redeeming itself, moving into the second half, the second act, I was actually kind of getting interested in where it was going. Mm-hmm. You know, I'd been looking for a story this whole time, and now they're finally giving me one. So I'm like, okay, I'm going
to
latch
onto
this.
It's like they tried to sneak it in under
and write it, see where it goes. And then we get to Nelson. We get to Nelson, and Nelson's my favorite thing about this movie. Thumbs up. I loved Nelson. The entire interaction in the thing with Nelson was awesome. Favorite character, my vote for MVP. My biggest thumbs down has to be the fact that it took me a long time to give a shit about any of these characters. I found Lulu entertaining, but she was almost too much to be believable, and she was doing things that I cannot really hugely be comfortable with, because she was using Charlie for her own amusement without any regard for what she was doing to his life, and that is not something I'm okay with people doing. It happens too much in real life, and
yeah,
it's bad. It's not.
We don't see this trope as much in movies now, but she's the manic pixie dream girl trope. You know, very much that kind of character right out of the gate.
Before the manic pixie dream girl was a trope.
Yes.
Right.
And that
she's a trope setter.
Basically, her character is somebody who is doing everything she can to not deal with herself, obviously.
At the expense of random people around her.
Which she doesn't even have a chance to deal with herself until Ray's dead at the end of the movie.
Yeah.
So, I mean, from that point on, she's tabula rasa, baby. I mean, there's nothing there. I have no idea who this character is supposed to be. But, you know, the Jeff Daniels transformation is the one, Charlie's transformation is the one that matters in the film.
Right.
You know, she's
she has one as well. That's true.
Yeah, and hers just, we just don't get to see any
even,
actual.
Even Ray has a transformation. He's transformed from living to dead.
It's one of my favorite transformations in the movie.
It was well deserved, and I was happy to see the guy die. I liked him, like you said, you know, but he was likable. His charisma was amazing. I commented on that a couple of times.
The scene
while I was watching
in the diner when he comes and sits down and tells him they're going to walk out. Just the look, that. Ray Liotta's look. That moment from that entire scene, and I'm sitting here going, I'm caught somewhere between run for your life and and this guy's a character.
Where
There's
did
no
you
way,
find your you know? Balls? No, that was definitely my favorite moment.
Yeah.
That was the payoff. That was the payoff for having sat through the first half of the movie.
Right.
In the end, I give this movie 3.5 stars. It was not fantastic, but I found it enjoyable. I found it very stimulating. And it made me want to look for stuff that I could relate to. And I found it. So good on you, Richard.
I am glad you found something stimulating about the movie.
I managed to enjoy this movie, and I'm glad we watched.
Thank you.
3 stars for me, Rich.
All right.
I liked it. And I realized that it sounds like coming from me, that's a terrible, terrible rating. But the truth is, I looked at your rating scale and, you know, what this said, again, the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 star ratings, and 3 is I liked it. It's above the average. Above
but you're
the
not going to tell someone else to watch it.
I'm not, honestly. I will say, and I might, I probably actually would have felt differently 20 years ago. This is a movie out of time
that's fair.
Regard, too.
Yeah, that helped. Yeah.
But I will say, Like I've kind of been commenting on, I found a lot to appreciate, and I would have been tempted to kind of go deeper into some of that, you know. But I don't want to watch the movie 20 more times. I'm sorry. And the thing is, what got me looking at the rating scale again, just to be sure, was your quiz, which we'll have to talk about here in a second.
I was going to say, because this would have been a great one for the quiz, because we're spread out all over the place.
That's actually something I'm going to go ahead and post a link to this in the show notes. There's a link to it on the Discord server. If you join our Discord community, you can find it there. We posted
My Movie Hero. It broke us down into 5 different personality types.
And it's this wonderful quiz. What Rich did putting together was he picked a lot of the movies that we had, obviously, very diverse kind of responses on.
As well as ones that each of us individually loved more than the others or disliked more than the others.
When you take the quiz, you get a chance to roll through some of these movies and give us your rating on it. And it breaks it down for you and reminds you about the movie and gets, like, I think you put trailers, like embedded video in there.
It's linked to IMDb, so you can look it up, all the resources on IMDb. Fantastic. If you can't remember which movie it is.
I think each of us was us.
In the testing, it worked out really well.
I took the quiz, and I was me.
I took the test, and I was me as well.
I would not have expected that you could get that precise a response that would cover all of us that way, given how much we vary on things, you'd be able to find enough responses.
But that's the thing. By picking the movies I picked some that statistically showed enough variances that the algorithm in the background of that could work, because it takes in those numbers and I tell it to assign point values, and it assigns higher points if they get closer to your score.
Now, the downside is, now, Jonica took the quiz, and she looked at it and went, wait a minute, what about X movie that I know you guys did, but I would have given you a very different rating than, say, I did, because she ended up like me.
Right.
Enthusiast. So she felt a little kind of cheated by that, and I was like, well, but the point is, that's a movie you're talking about where all of us gave it. Like, for example, Jonica has no interest in Cloud Atlas. It's not the kind of movie she would watch.
And that would have been a bad choice because we all rated high. Like Odd Thomas.
Exactly.
Odd Thomas would be a hard choice because we're all going to do 4 and 5s.
And so it tells
what are you going to do? It's just going to not match you with us. Right.
Take the test. Let us know your results. Get onto the Discord and let us know, you know, how you kind of rate. And it'll give us more information, too, by getting your responses and how well you feel it reflected your opinion of our show and our cast and the way we break things down, how much you agree. Like, because if it tells you you're me, you're going to have an opinion about whether or not you feel like you like everything as much as I do.
Whereas if it tells you that you're Jason, why are you even listening to our show, you curmudgeon-y old coot?
there's a lower rating.
This is exactly the type of show that I would listen to.
That's true.
That's fair.
Because it has me on it. not that I want to listen to me. I hate listening.
Representation.
To me. But
when you get through the 14 movies, it actually gives you the option to share your results with Facebook, Twitter, or I think Pinterest if you really want to.
Nice. All right, check that out. What do you got on the final score here?
So it ended up at 2.75. So it's not quite Conan the Barbarian.
that's unfortunate.
It's down with the Monster Squad and Red Steel and what was the other one? The Abyss.
Okay, never mind. I'm okay with this.
Ooh,
so
cool. Well,
puts it in that zone. It's just kind of meh.
So what's our plan for next week, then?
After the Dark on Amazon Prime.
This is your selection.
Yeah, it is.
I'm looking forward to it. Another one I haven't seen. Another one almost does it, right? None of us have seen, right? Except for...
I've not seen it.
Yeah, okay, cool. So check out After the Dark on Netflix, and we'll see you next week. You gotta get on out of here. Thank you for joining us. Oh, Amazon. Sorry, Amazon. Amazon Prime. For Richard, for Vanessa, for Jason, for the kid, my name is Eric Caveri. Have a fantastic week. We'll see you then. Bye-bye.
you, Charlie.